were found buried near destroyed vehicles in Rafah, southern Gaza. The movement says this act reflects a blatant disregard for humanitarian treaties and the principles of the international law. Hamas has also criticized the international community's silence as complicity. The group urged the United Nations and humanitarian organizations, including the International Committee of the Red Cross, to take urgent action to uncover the fate of thousands of missing civilians in Rafah. This came as Israel's military has confirmed firing on ambulances last Sunday in Rafah's Tel al-Sultan neighborhood, labeling them as suspicious vehicles. The detention of a pro-Palestinian Turkish student by the U.S. immigration authorities has sparked outrage and debate across the United States, with her friends describing the situation as horrifying.
That is terrifying, and it's terrifying for not only for me, who knows her very well, but it's probably terrifying for everyone else who would understand the situation here. Some of my friends and my students, actually, who are international and who are on valid visas, just like Rumeysa, they are really scared.
Rumeysa was targeted, you know, right at her home. I believe Mahmoud Khalil was as well. So it's just, yeah, it's very terrifying. But I think, you know, people want to keep resisting and keep organizing and fighting for justice, you know, both in Palestine and here locally.
Rumeysa Öztürk's arrest is the first known detention of a Boston-area student involving pro-Palestinian activism under the Trump administration. Her detention comes a year after she co-authored an opinion piece in the school's student paper criticizing the university's ties to companies linked to Israel and calling for acknowledgement of the genocide of Palestinians by Israel. Critics have dismissed her arrest as an assault on free speech, while the Trump administration defends its actions. Over 30 Democratic lawmakers also condemned the arrest, saying it targets political views rather than public safety. Earlier this month, U.S. police arrested Mahmoud Khalil, a Columbia University student, over his participation in pro-Palestine protests. Almost a year after the Gaza Solidarity Encampments uprising started, at Columbia University in New York, a documentary has been released depicting the day-to-day of what the students lived through to protest against the genocide in Gaza. Rachel Hamdoun reports from New York.
Premiering at the Angelika Film Center in New York City, the documentary The Encampments takes the audience into the daily lives and struggles of the Columbia University students who set up tents on campus to condemn the Israeli genocide in Gaza and to call on their university to boycott and divest from the occupation. The documentary is produced by Watermelon Pictures and Palestinian youth movement organizer Munir Atallah, creative director Alana Hadid, and singer Macklemore, and directed by Michael T. Workman and Breakthrough News' Kay Pritzker. It features stories of detained Columbia graduate Mahmoud Khalil, who remains in ICE custody, and notable Columbia alumni, such as activists Layan Flayhan, Sueda Polat, Nay Idris, and recently expelled student Grant Miner.
The thing about the story of Palestine is it's a story that almost tells itself. Like, I don't think as a journalist, you really have to pour on a lot of extra on the top. We told the story of the encampment based on the words of the protagonists, of the organizers, of the leaders of the movement. And, you know, it's the same thing with the story of Palestine itself. You don't need to, you know, craft all these arguments, this and the other. The people themselves are the living proof of the justness and the righteousness of the Palestinian cause.
Protesters and students alike remain on the streets to call out the Trump administration for suppressing freedom of speech, which comes as part of the Trump executive order to capture and deport pro-Palestine action protesters in the so-called act to combat anti-Semitism.
University students, such as those at Columbia and across the U.S., have stood in solidarity with Palestine through last year's Gaza Solidarity Encampments, which emerged in a new anti-war movement. And because of that, students like Mahmoud Khalil have been targeted by ICE in violation of their right to free speech.
To release this film today, as the Trump administration has tried to smear him, really counters their narrative and completely destroys any case they were trying to build against him. And I think that films like this are amplifying, accelerating that shift, and also cementing the new understanding that an entire generation has come into realizing that the Zionist project is a genocidal project, that you know, people in Gaza should not be slaughtered in mass by this government's weapons, funds, and political cover.
Students continue to be detained as a result of doxing by Zionist groups for being pro-Palestine, like Rumeysa Öztürk from Tufts University, and even others whose stories have not been yet told. But one thing is clear, the truth about Palestine shall prevail. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
Political analyst John Bosnich says detention of pro-Palestinian students by U.S. authorities is completely against the U.S. Constitution.
The Trump administration is going to learn a lesson very quickly. It's established U.S. law that every person in the United States, regardless of their citizenship, enjoys the right of freedom of speech, so long as the woman in question here has not violated any laws in terms of destroying property or violence. There is no chance that she can be arrested and deported in violation of the U.S. Constitution. What she needs now is a good lawyer, and there are many lawyers who would take this case for free at no charge to her, who would assert the U.S. constitutional guarantee of freedom of speech. Unfortunately, in the United States, many of the universities are private, and these private universities are subject to the wishes of their donors. Now, in the United States, the donors tend to be very rich people, and many of them are connected to the U.S. government, to the U.S. military-industrial complex, and so on. So, if the universities receive pressure from their private funders to not allow freedom of speech on the campus, the universities themselves may use their campus security forces to violate the students' rights.
The Palestinian Foreign Ministry has strongly condemned a violent Israeli settler attack in the Misafer Yara area of the occupied West Bank, calling it an act of ethnic cleansing carried out under Israeli military protection. The attack, which took place on Friday morning, left five Palestinians seriously injured, including 17-year-old Qusay and his father. Settlers armed with rocks and metal pipes brutally bit the teen, who sustained a serious head injury, while his father suffered a brain hemorrhage and a skull fractures. Following the attack, Israeli forces arrested over 20 Palestinians, falsely accusing them of attacking settlers. In a separate incident, Israeli settlers backed by military forces stormed a mosque east of Nablus, attacking Palestinian worshippers there. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry has called for urgent international intervention to stop Israel's escalating colonial campaign of racial prosecution, genocide, forced displacement, and annexation. Israeli forces have intensified their raids on and incursions into the occupied West Bank. We were earlier joined by Naga Hamid, our correspondent in Ramallah, to give us more on the situation there.
Well, the Israeli restrictions and the Israeli, as it is called, security measures have intensified greatly since yesterday, as the IOF and the Israeli regime was trying to ban Palestinians from going into occupied Al-Quds, trying to keep every Palestinian inside their own city. The Palestinian Red Crescent has informed about two injuries inside Nablus, severely beaten two girls, two Palestinian girls, 18 and 14 years old women, were assaulted and beaten while the IOF raided their home in the hours of the morning in the area of Nablus. While, of course, we are seeing more intensified raids towards Nablus and towards their refugee camps, to be more precise. Al-Ain refugee camp, Asker and Balata refugee camps are being under attack, systematically under attack. And not very far from Nablus, Tamun, also in the province of Qubas, was raided, and many homes were reportedly, according to local resources, many homes where the IOF made incursions to those homes, detained tens of Palestinians to fieldly interrogate them and assaulted them, and then until this moment, the moon remains under siege, after the IOF is still working inside the moon.
The United States presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching new airstrikes on various areas across the Arab country. Yemeni media say U.S. airstrikes hit Saada, killing one person and wounding four others. The U.S. has reportedly carried out 14 strikes on the outskirts of Saada city. The latest attack comes after the U.S. targeted more than 40 locations across Yemen, including in the capital, Sana'a, damaging multiple residential buildings and shops. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israel operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Washington says it will use overwhelming force until the Ansarullah resistance movement stops in its anti-Israel operation. Hossein al-Bukhaiti, a Yemeni activist and political commentator from Sana'a, says the Yemeni people are increasingly supporting their country's anti-Israeli operations in a show of solidarity with Palestine, despite the U.S. attacks on Yemen.
The United States, actually, they always cry out loud of Yemeni attack, as Trump said in the Red Sea. It cost the international economy billions of dollars, and as well the United States economy. Of course, I mean, this is the result of their involvement in the war against Gaza. And I mean, instead of sending all their battleship, instead of losing these billions of dollars in launching attack against Yemen, in trying to stop Yemeni drones attack against the United States battleship, they could just actually lift the blockade against Gaza, allow hundreds of trucks with food and fuel and water to enter Gaza, and all that will stop. Yesterday, millions of Yemenis have took up to the street in remember of the Al-Quds Day, which is the last Friday of Ramadan, and those people actually are demanding the Yemeni army to expand its attack. They are demanding Yemeni army to resume all its five stages of escalation that was before the so-called truce in Gaza was signed, which means to block the Red Sea in front of the United States commercial ship, and as well UK commercial ship, and against any country that's involved in attacking Yemen, and as well to impose a blockade against not only Israeli ship, but as well against any ship. It doesn't matter what nationality that's heading toward Israel.
The death toll from the massive earthquakes that hit Myanmar and Thailand has crossed 1,000 as rescuers continue to dig through the rubble to search for survivors. The 7.7 magnitude earthquake struck central Myanmar midday on Friday, followed minutes later by a 6.7 magnitude aftershock. Over 1,000 people were killed and more than 2,300 injured in the second biggest city, Mandalay, which is believed to be the worst affected. The toll is expected to rise significantly. In the Thai capital, 10 people were confirmed killed as a skyscraper under construction collapsed in seconds by the force of the shaking. Scores of workers are still unaccounted for at the building, with rescue operations underway. India, France, and the European Union have offered to provide assistance to Myanmar after the ruling military general issued a plea for international assistance. That's it for this bulletin. Thank you, and bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
South Africa's iconic freedom fighter and first democratically elected leader Nelson Mandela once remarked, "We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians." So how can the International Quds Day be utilized as a strategic platform to further Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and work towards realizing his dream? And to discuss the International Quds Day and Africa's support for the liberation of Palestine, we are joined by Dr. Feroz Osman. He is the executive member of Media Review Network. We are also joined by Hassan Loget. He is the co-founder of Media Justice Africa. The International Quds Day is observed annually on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. Established by Imam Khomeini in 1979, this popular occasion serves as a global expression of solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle against the Israeli apartheid regime and its ongoing atrocities. Quds Day has united voices worldwide in support of Palestine, and today, Africa has emerged as a formidable resistance force against the Israeli genocidal regime. Despite intense U.S. pressure and Israeli attempts to infiltrate the continent, Africa's resistance continues to strengthen. Countries like South Africa, drawing from their own anti-apartheid struggle, are at the forefront of resisting the Israeli apartheid regime. South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice further cements Africa's role as a leading advocate for Palestinian liberation. Africa is proving that solidarity with Palestine is more than symbolic. It is a firm commitment to dismantling the Israeli apartheid regime. So how can the International Quds Day be utilized as a powerful platform to advance Nelson Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and turn his call for justice into meaningful action on the global stage?
Africa backs Quds liberation.
Each year on the International Quds Day, large-scale demonstrations take place across Africa in support of Palestine. Home to one-third of the global Muslim population, the continent sees hundreds of thousands joining the worldwide movement advocating for Palestine's liberation. A participant at one of the demonstrations held in the coastal city of Mombasa in Kenya speaks here on the importance of standing with the oppressed people of Palestine.
We should not be ashamed to stand with the oppressors if our hearts are burning, but we keep away from the people who are oppressed, we can't even raise the voices, then shame on us. We have one thing left on us, and that's our voice. And if we come out, we should claim this occupation no more and not say Israel is a free state, but Israel is a no state. Because it was a usurped land of the Palestinians, given by the British, the Balfour Declaration, gave them land that doesn't belong to them. Why? Because they wanted to get rid of the Jews that were there. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to me, but please, I would request you, echo this out. Remind the people of the world that the oppressed need your voices.
The observance of the International Quds Day, established in 1979 by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, has become a global tradition of marches and conferences advocating for the Palestinian cause. His appeal for global solidarity continues to resonate worldwide. Africa is part and parcel of this international movement in support of Palestine. Now, let's start off with Dr. Firoz Osman. How has the International Quds Day contributed to raising awareness about the Palestinian liberation struggle across the African continent?
The Iranian Revolution in 1979 was a true revolution. In other words, many of the other revolutions that have taken place did not remove the institutions and the deep state. For example, what happened in Egypt. You know, it lasted a year and then it was overthrown again. And the old systems and their controllers came back in power. So it is probably in recent memory, the only true revolution. And it is quite remarkable for Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, that in 1979, he already declared Al-Quds Day. It showed their determination to free the third most holiest shrine. And it is a day that has been commemorated now ever since 45 years or plus. And it has created a global phenomenon not only in Africa, as we mentioned, but throughout the world, where Palestine has been brought up into the map. Many others are gaining, given under the current circumstances, what is happening in Gaza, that they are getting courage from what has been happening in Gaza. There is no doubt that, you know, it is Iran that stands against the world system that wants to occupy and oppress people, and it is the Palestinians in Gaza that is fighting the same phenomenon with a great deal of courage, looking to Al-Quds for their liberation, to all countries that are helping them. And in fact, you know, it is the protest marches that began right in Iran in 1979 that continues to this day.
Thanks for that, Dr. Osman. Now let's bring in Hassan Loget. At the 30th African Union Summit held in Addis Ababa last February, African leaders took a strong position against Israel, denouncing its assault on Gaza as genocide and demanding a halt to all cooperation until the Israeli occupation ends. Now, how does Africa's steadfast support for Palestine pose a significant challenge to Netanyahu, who has spent the past decade working to expand Israel's influence across the continent?
The 38th African summit, the AU summit, held in Addis, was very significant because it suggested for the first time that Africa was uniting once again behind Palestine. We have to go back many decades, I think in the early 1980s, when the Organization of African Unity was at its height, trying to create a program for the liberation of the African continent from colonialism and apartheid, that they made a statement in the founding declaration of the African People's Charter, African Charter for Human and People's Rights. And that charter, also known as the Banjul document, was very, very instrumental in putting Zionism as one of the targets. And I wanted to quote a little bit of it. The charter basically said they wanted to achieve the total liberation of Africa, of peoples which are still struggling for their dignity and genuine independence, and undertaking to eliminate colonialism, neocolonialism, apartheid, and Zionism, and to dismantle aggressive foreign military bases and all forms of discrimination, particularly those based on race, ethnic groups, color, sex, language, religion, or political opinion. So it looks like this was a victory for the progressive forces led by South Africa and Algeria.
Ties between the Israeli apartheid regime and the African Union significantly worsen after Israel's assault on Gaza in October 2023, which led to mass atrocities and genocide, resulting in the deaths of over 50,000 Palestinian women and children. Across Africa, people have gathered in massive numbers for rallies in solidarity with Palestine, especially during International Quds Day. These demonstrations impacted the African Union's policy decisions.
The African Union is pivotal. It is important for increasing pressure on the Zionist entity. If we recall way back in 1973, most African countries, almost all bar one or two, broke their ties after the oil embargo in support of the Palestinians, in support of the Arab world. However, the Zionist entity's aim is to bring about a change in Africa, in the African nation states, through the observer status in the African Union. We know a year or two ago that South Africa played a pivotal role to remove the Zionist entity from its observer status in the African Union, despite the fact that some of the African Union member states wanted Israel to be present. You see, what the Zionist state does is to use its soft power, its technology, its military, where they bribe and blackmail and try to influence the African nation states to support Israel against the Palestinians. And this is where, again, the Iranian Islamic Republic of Iran has played an important role. It is also important for other Muslim nations to be aware of what is happening in parts of Africa and to help the African nations to ward off the soft power that the Zionist entity is using.
Many African countries are actively forging stronger ties with global powers that challenge Western dominance, such as China, Russia, and Iran. These alliances grant them greater political leverage, enabling them to take more independent stances on international matters, including the Palestinian issue. The evolving geopolitical landscape has played a key role in further isolating Israel's apartheid regime in Africa.
Where you find Israel, you'll find conflict. And I think that the countries that want to turn away from conflict have to find a path of peace and are looking for other ways. In the Sahel region, a number of countries have kicked off the leadership military alliances with France. But as I pointed out earlier, we need to negotiate new terms of engagement and relationships with countries like Russia, and so that we do not find ourselves a few years down the line with someone that we cannot live with. We need to live with countries that will affirm African values so that Africa can use its own minerals for its betterment, and we can't replace one set of dictators for another. So yes, getting France out has been strategic, but Africa must renegotiate its terms of engagement with other countries on its own politics, its own agenda that's African-centric. And Kwame Nkrumah was very, very clear that Africa's got a long way to build a United States of Africa where all our resources could be used to uplift our own people.
The comparison between the Israeli regime policies towards Palestinians and the deposed South African apartheid regime has been made by both scholars and political leaders. Now, Dr. Osman, this is for you. In what ways do you see these parallels playing out today, particularly because Western powers, which once supported the apartheid regime in South Africa, are now backing the Israeli apartheid regime?
South Africa under apartheid is exactly the same as apartheid in Israel. And this is said very clearly by our first president, Nelson Mandela. It was said by our moral voice in South Africa, Bishop Tutu. In fact, they didn't say it's exactly the same. They say what is going on in Israel is worse than what has happened in South Africa. That the apartheid there is worse. And we can see it from the genocide. In fact, the Media Review Network commissioned a book, and it is entitled Why Israel? The Anatomy of Zionist Apartheid, a South African Perspective, where it makes very clear the parallels between what was under apartheid in South Africa and what is apartheid in Israel at the moment. And in fact, it's become so obvious that it is no longer a debatable issue. The reason for the support of Zionist apartheid is that the same countries that supported white apartheid racism in South Africa are supporting the Zionist Israeli state, such as Germany, United States of America, Great Britain, France. All of them supported white South Africa until it became untenable, until they could no longer control it and could not stop it. So these are the same racist white settler colonial regimes that are supporting Israel today. And in fact, we can see that what is going on with the Trump administration today, that it is white settler colonialism.
Well, thanks for that, Dr. Osman. Let's now take a short break before we continue our discussion on Africa's solidarity with Palestine as we mark the International Quotes Day. Stay with us.
Africa backs God's liberation.
In late 2023, South Africa filed a case at the International Court of Justice over the Israeli apartheid regime's genocidal war on Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Ron Lamola, the current South African foreign minister, speaks here at the ICJ, where he led his country's legal team while serving as the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. Let's take a listen.
Thank you, Madam President, and distinguished members of the court. It is an honor for me to stand here in front of you on behalf of the Republic of South Africa on this exceptional case. In extending our hands across the miles to the people of Palestine, we do so in full knowledge that we are part of a humanity that is at one. These were the words of our founding president, Nelson Mandela. This is the spirit in which South Africa acceded to the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of Crime of Genocide in 1998. This is the spirit in which we approach this court as a contracting party to the Convention. This is a commitment we owe to the people of Palestine and Israelis alike. As previously mentioned, the violence and the destruction in Palestine and Israel did not begin on the 7th of October 2023. The Palestinians have experienced systematic oppression and violence for the last 76 years.
Well, South Africa's case at the International Court of Justice has been described as both a legal and moral stance against the genocide in Gaza. Now, Mr. Logan, this is for you. How significant is this moment for South Africa's history, given its own past with apartheid, and how does it shape its role in global justice and human rights advocacy?
We have to find whatever means possible to preserve a sensible system in the world, a system of equality amongst nations, so that the rule of law, international human rights law, can actually prevail. At present, Trump wants might to rule, not justice, might. And I think South Africa is correct in building these alliances. Our ambassador was declared a persona non grata in America, and Trump has basically asked him to leave the country. This is Ibrahim Rasool, for simply speaking at a web conference in this country, Mistra, where he basically said that Trump and him are fearing the increasing numbers of black and brown peoples in the world, in America, that are beginning to have influence. And he implied that they were trying to preserve white supremacist politics. None of that is untrue, but he's chosen to punish South Africa. So Trump and him are being vindictive, not only to South Africa, but anyone who dared to oppose them, even people in his own party. But South Africa is being bullied. Unfortunately, there are a number of people in our country who actually support Trump, and they happen to be from those who are privileged, happen to be largely white.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Julius Malema, the leader of South Africa's Economic Freedom Fighters Party, frequently takes part in demonstrations backing the Palestinian resistance. In this speech, he expresses his support for Hamas, the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement. Let's tune in.
What type of a government do we have in Israel that goes and bomb a hospital? where people have run away for refugee, where people are sick, where children are there, where pregnant women are there, you bomb a hospital. And you say you are looking for Hamas, but you are killing innocent children. There is nothing wrong Hamas did. This folk tongues and people speaking in parables and we don't know what they are hearing, what they are saying, it's wrong. When you are oppressed, the only option you have is to fight. And that's what Hamas is doing. They are fighting for their freedom. Mandela did the same thing, took up the guns and fought for the freedom of the people of South Africa. When you are oppressed, you only have one option. Confront the enemy and shoot to kill. Do not kiss the enemy.
South Africa's liberation hero, Nelson Mandela, became known and respected all over the world as a symbol of the struggle against apartheid and all forms of racism. He was steadfast in his support for the liberation of Palestine. He famously stated that, "We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians."
Mr. Alogat, you have the last word. How can events like the International Courts Day be leveraged as a platform to advance Nelson Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and turn his aspiration into a reality?
When the late president, liberation hero Nelson Mandela said, "Our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of Palestinians," he basically drew inspiration from the time when the ANC in exile was trained and supported by the Palestinian Liberation Organization. It was a unity built in the trenches. And when he went to America, they tried to ask him to disassociate from Arafat and the PLO and Fatah. And he said, when days were dark and friends were few, only Palestinians, Libya and other countries stood by us while others ignored us. And really, this is the message of Sumud, as the Palestinians say, the steadfastness that Iran and other countries, the Houthis, Lebanon and others, have been very principled in their support for Palestine. Cuba too, they want nothing in return. They support it not because they desire critical minerals, as Trump wants, from the Ukraine. They support it because they believe every nation has a right to determine its own destiny. Every nation has a right to self-determination. And we have fought a long battle, and we are still continuing given the nature of our settlement, and we want to lend a hand so that Palestine one day can be a truly independent state of all its people.
Well, thanks a lot, Hassan Logat and Dr. Firoz Osman, for your incisive analysis. And now we welcome you on Palestine as we mark the International Courts Day.
Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my son, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. I've dug the earth with my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. You, good earth, glorious land, son to you, see, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head
since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on, lullaby. Lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice. Sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here. This land, your blood, my heart.
And that wraps it up for this week's edition of Africa Today. On behalf of the entire crew, it's me, Mubarak Kenya, saying goodbye for now.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful, and may great peace and blessing be upon Prophet Muhammad and his household. Assalamu alaikum, my dear audience, brothers and sisters, and welcome back to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. Previously, we were talking about the different characteristics that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala explains in His holy book about the true servants, Ibadur Rahman, perfect human beings. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the following verse says, وَالَّذِينَ لَا يَشَهَدُونَ الزُّورِ. Let me not translate at this time this verse, so I can give you a preliminary introduction and explanation, and then we will get back to the verse to see what the verse exactly means. You see, in this world, we sometimes get disease. We become sick. So as soon as we become sick, we start facing, and actually there is a kind of conflict between us and the disease. We start a kind of treatment. But there are three stages for removing, for coming over of the disease. The best way for that is prevention. To prevent from being sick. Nowadays, you see that in the world, lots of countries, they have the schedule for vaccination. They vaccine other people in order to prevent a disease from being spread in the country or in the city. So the best way to stop the disease, the best way for coming over the difficulty is prevention. Yes, if we have not prevented, have not act accordingly, and then we got the disease, the second way is to treat with medicines. That is something very ordinary, very normal in our age. But there's also a third way. The third way is fortification, is immunization, meaning that if there's a person who is physically weak, as soon as a specific virus comes to the city, this weak person is among the ones who will be infected very immediately. Why? Because when your body is not strong, your defensive system in your body is not strong, then as soon as the virus comes, the defense system within your body is not capable of suppressing that virus. Therefore, that virus will be held in your body and then it will make you sick. So, in order to suppress and remove the sickness, you have to learn how to reinforce your body. You have to learn fortification. You have to learn how to immunize your body. So these are three ways. Now, let's think of this point, that don't you think that committing a sin is somehow like a disease which requires to be treated? Think of that question. We will get back after a short break. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad ya muslimi sallu alayhi. Welcome back to the series of Talks for Humanity. This is Hamza Azizi. Now, think of the disease as a sickness. The same stages that we elaborated about a disease, the same examples, the same stages are going to be applied for the committing sins. That is also a kind of disease. Whether the disease that comes to our body or to the whole society. So as we said that the best way is prevention, about the sins also we have to say the best way for purification is fortification, is prevention. The best way is prevention. So many acts that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala enjoins us to do them are playing the role of prevention. It's been narrated from Prophet Muhammad, which he says, "As-sawmu junnatun minan nar." Fasting is a buffer against the sins, is a buffer against the hellfire, is a deterrent against the hellfire. So, as-sawmu junnatun minan nar. In another verse, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "Inna salata tanha 'anil fahsha'i wal munkar." Indeed, the prayer prevents incidents from wrongs. The prayer prevents indecencies and wrongs. So it means that if you want to stop your soul from committing a sin in advance, you have to pray, you have to fast. وَاسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ These two ones are both advised against in this verse. وَاسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ Take recourse in patience and prayer. And in some narrations, patience is being interpreted as fasting. So, وَاسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ It means get help from them. Take recourse in patience and prayer. So, when we continue constantly doing these righteous acts, salat, sawm, other things, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will help us. Then, after a while, we feel that I have no feeling about committing sin. It means I do not enjoy it. And that is a very good level. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help us to reach that level, not to think of committing a sin. So up to now, we said that there are some acts which facilitate the way we can avoid committing a sin, as well as the other acts that facilitate and ease the committing a sin. The one who sets the table of wine, he actually is inviting the others and actually is facilitating everything for the people to drink wine while it is forbidden. So the reason beyond many instructions by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, divine instructions, is to keep and prevent us from committing a sin. Thank you. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen.
Jannah, Jannah, it's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hamas calls for international investigations into Israel's targeting of medical teams in Gaza as the regime admits firing on ambulances in a Palestinian territory. The United States conducts new deadly airstrikes on several areas in Yemen, including the capital Sana'a. Rescue teams continue to dig through the rubble to search for survivors of a massive 7.7 magnitude earthquake which struck central Myanmar on Friday. Welcome to the program. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has strongly condemned the targeting of medical teams by Israeli forces in Gaza, calling for international investigations. Hamas has said, after days of losing contact with the humanitarian team, several bodies of their members were found buried near destroyed vehicles in Rafah, southern Gaza. The movement says this act reflects a blatant disregard for humanitarian treaties and the principles of the international law. Hamas has also criticized the international community's silence.